From the headquarters of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, this is Capital and Scott. I'm your host, Laura Farrar. We're entering day 7 of the Russian invasion in Ukraine. On Tuesday night, during his State of the Union address, President Biden announced that he would ban Russian planes from American airspace and release 60 million barrels of oil from strategic reserves to curtail rising gas prices. Meantime, as of Wednesday morning, Russian forces are ramping up attacks in Ukraine as their forces surround more major cities there. Over the past few days, I interviewed Ukrainians living in Arkansas about the invasion. On Sunday, I met with Jana Heineman at her home on Lake Hamilton in Hot Springs. She's been glued to Ukrainian television since the invasion started last week.
Hello.
Hello. Are you?
How are you?
Jana?
Yes.
I'm Laura.
Hi. Yeah. What you doing? You're not the dog. Come on.
Kitty, kitty, come here.
Do you want some coffee, tea?
Coffee would be great, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So I sit down with Jana, and she pulls out her phone and starts to show me videos that friends have sent her from her hometown of Sumy, which is just near the Russian border in northeastern Ukraine, and it's also where her mom and dad are living. She said a lot of the fighting is going on about 5 minutes from her parents' home. The videos are showing tanks going through the middle of Sumy, and another video shows soldiers who are shooting at each other with machine guns or some type of assault rifle. And a lot of this is happening just minutes away from neighborhoods where there are civilians who are still living there and hiding inside of their homes.
Where would this be in relation to your parents' house?
This is like 5 minutes drive.
Is this just like a neighborhood?
This is where close to the college, where the, like I said, military college.
What has the past couple of weeks been like for you? I mean, when we started to hear about the troop buildup around Ukraine, like it was 100-something thousand, then it increased to 170,000,
yeah.
And people were sort of thinking this might happen or this
yeah.
might not happen. What were you
yeah.
thinking was going to happen?
We don't know, but we did prepare ahead of time. So I sent them a little bit help. Like 10 days before everything starts right. In the right moment, I tell them just go and get some stuff what they might need. We're not gonna spoil it very fast. So they went and like get some groceries and they will prepare it. And a couple days later, here we go.
This is what, day 3 or 4 of sort of combat
mm-hmm.
going on. How have you personally just been feeling?
Pretty bad, yeah. I see my classmates and from university, my friends who ended up in Kyiv, they was asking each other if anybody available to give me a ride from this area to different area. Everybody helped each other, but it's okay. I can see that people is very supportive, you know, that you can, everybody, it was like a sleep now, everybody wake up and help everybody. Pretty cool, actually.
Do you have friends who are getting guns and making Molotov cocktails? I've seen pictures of this, you know, women school teachers.
They don't mind. They say, I don't care. Even my parents, when they was getting the groceries a couple of days ago before it begins, she said they was driving a cab, and cab driver was asking them, did you got the guns somewhere? But you can't find the guns. You can't buy it like in United States. Just go and buy it. Now they can give it to you, but back then they can't. And he said, I do have my gun. And people said, I was going to use a knife or whatever. They say, I was going to fight anyway. I don't care.
Can you just imagine this? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, somebody come to you, like somebody come to your land and saying yes. You know what? It's pretty nice. I'm decide. I'm gonna own it now. That's really doesn't sound right at all. No, and you ask them just why are you doing this? Because I have a gun. So you just deal with this. I don't think we're gonna deal with this.
I think they tell this morning 16 kids already dead during this 4 days. If you live in an apartment like this, you're done.
think my parents in the private house, so they have somewhere to go, but this is just so bad.
Do you think your family is really, are they really afraid? What's your sense of just the level of fear?
Pretty high. Only one thing what I'm worried about right now in particular, that if I'm gonna wake up in the morning and have no connection, period. So that means I can't send them the letter. Post office is not working, nothing working, so I will not gonna know if they're alive or not. They're dead or what. This is what I'm worried about. Every day when since the last couple days when I wake up and I call them every morning and I got this, I'm fine to the rest of the day. I know they're okay, they're still alive, they sleep well at home, they have something to eat, they're warm. That's what is matter for right now. That's it.
Have they considered leaving?
No.
To go to Poland?
No, some people did, a lot of actually, many thousands left. But the question is, you may go away, but then those Russian vandals will gonna get in and break the doors and take your stuff. That's the other story. Otherwise, if you have chance to survive and stay in your house, then but protect your house somehow, or you just basically leave, run, and lost everything guaranteed.
Right.
She said, my mom said they already break the some grocery stores because the Russian soldiers is hungry.
So what do you think is going to happen?
I think it's going to be a long story. It's not going to be finished very fast like everybody is sometimes sending me a message lately. I hope it's going to finish so quick and fast. No, I don't think so. It's been already 8 years. Even if something's gonna stop, can you imagine mood? Even the kids who are just little ones right now, they will remember it forever until they were gonna get adult. It's all gonna continue sitting in their head. So this is not a good.
I just don't know how you emotionally handle. If it were my family,
yeah,
dealing with this daily and I couldn't help them.
And you can't do nothing. You're across the ocean. Yeah, that's just crazy.
I would be a total mess. I don't know how you're coping with this.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm pretty much surprised myself too. I need to be, you know, strong.
So are you staying home most days and just watching the news, or what are you?
The last few days I'm trying to see what's really going on, because if I see something is moving to more again to my town, I better just call them, say, hey, I don't care about if your legs is hurting, just go downstairs somewhere down the ground.
And so what does your parents' house look like? It has a basement or something they could go down into?
Mm-hmm. It's a brick house. We have a garage and have a lot of apple trees around and have kind of like a storage building. And inside of the storage building, like a hole in the ground that you open the lid and just go in where you have shelves with the food.
What if you can't reach them? Do you have someone else you can contact to check on them for you?
See, if something were gonna happen, then that means whole town gonna be without everything. They all gonna be in the same situation, so there is no way. No cell phone connection, no internet, nothing. I hope it will not gonna happen, but that's what I'm worried about.
We'll be right back with more Capital and Scott. Hi, this is Laura Farrar. The stories we dive into on Capital and Scott are just a fraction of the reporting the Democrat Gazette brings to readers every day. If you'd like to support our commitment to bringing you the latest in Arkansas news, sports, and entertainment, consider subscribing to the Democrat Gazette. With your subscription, you'll get a digital edition of the newspaper every morning, along with the latest news and updates delivered to you on an iPad provided at no extra cost. For just $34 a month, you'll get the same award-winning journalism you've come to expect from the Democrat Gazette, plus exclusive photo galleries, videos, articles, and digital extras like this podcast, all in the palm of your hand. To sign up today, call 1-800-482-1121 or visit us online at arkansasonline.com/subscribe. Welcome back to Capital and Scott. On Tuesday, I spoke with Nadja Berkovich, a professor at the University of Arkansas. Berkovich was born in Ukraine. She's lived in both Russia and Ukraine before moving to the U.S. in 2001. Her parents live in Russia, and she has friends and family in Ukraine. She says that there are divisions in her family about the war and why it's happening.
Hello.
Hi, is this Nadja?
Yes, Lara.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I would have 20 minutes.
Okay, that's perfect. So I just wanted to start with, from the outset of the invasion, we're now about almost a week into this. What were your thoughts in terms of when this happened? How did it affect you learning that basically war was happening in Ukraine?
How does it affect me? It affects me immediately. I have family connections. I have relatives living in eastern Ukraine in Donetsk area, which has been occupied since 2014. I have contact to my cousins, and they've been saying that it's a real war. They live in fear. They've been hiding in a bomb shelter, and it's terrifying. They have young kids, teenagers, and it affects me and every Russian friend that I have the same way, because it's a very intimate war, intimate in the sense that these are people that were our neighbors, and I mean, are our neighbors, and it's not war of Russians. It's a war of one delusional president, a criminal president who started the war.
So with it being so personal, I mean, you and I have spoken before, and I understand that you have roots culturally both in Russia and Ukraine. How does one reconcile the fact that people who are neighbors, so culturally intertwined, are basically sort of, I don't know if you would use the term being forced to, but turning on each other right now and killing each other? How do you sort of reconcile this just with what's going on and just the closeness of Russia with Ukraine historically, just on a neighborly sort of friendship basis?
First of all, I don't reconcile that, because you can't reconcile the action of one delusional person to start the war. These are not the war started by Russian people. This war was imposed by one individual who started that. And, you know, this war, nobody wants the war. You talk to Russian that, read independent media, and they will tell you this is, you know, they're speechless. How you reconcile? You don't reconcile the war. You don't reconcile violence with violence. You know, people go and protest. There is no words for what this person has done. He has to be brought to the international court and brought in jail and executed. I don't think, you know, you have to reconcile.
Do you feel more strongly now about what's going on and what's transpired in terms of just the escalation of civilian deaths, the escalation of violence, that it's become a bigger issue for you over the past week? In the beginning, maybe, I don't know how clear it was to people exactly how this was going to escalate, but almost a week into it, it just appears to be getting worse and worse. Has your perspective changed over the past few days regarding what's going on with the invasion?
I mean, my perspective has not changed. I've been critical of everything that this criminal president has been doing since invasion of eastern Ukraine and Crimea since 2014. The war has been there for the last 8 years. It's never stopped. And it affects everyone. I mean, I don't think it's... But for people that come from that region, it's very intimate. And I use this word because I know this territory. I know the people. I know the language. And we are not enemies. We've been put in this situation by one single individual who has to bear responsibility for this.
You've had exposure to Russians or people who live in Russia who are falling on both sides of the spectrum. Some are blaming the United States, basically justifying the invasion in one way or another. And then some are completely against it. I mean, obviously we've seen protests in St. Petersburg and elsewhere in Russia.
Can you explain why some people are on the side of Putin in this circumstance and how we who are, you know, in the United States or elsewhere just can't seem to understand why anyone would support this right now?
Well, I don't think it's hard to understand why people support Putin. First of all, Russia state-sponsored media presents news inaccurate. It's a complete disinformation of what really happens. First of all, there is a censorship. There is that federal censorship service. I mean, it's a federal service for the supervision of communication and mass media that prohibited any outlets to use the words, the war, invasion, and intrusion when talking about the war in Ukraine. So anyone who watches state-sponsored TV or reads or listens will absolutely have no idea what really is happening because they're completely misinformed on purpose to create a narrative to justify what this president is doing. There are also independent media platforms that are critical of the pro-Kremlin regime. One of them is Meduza platform. I highly recommend exploring it. It's in English and Russian. It's based in Latvia. Another is TV Rain, Dosht, I just named two. And they were labeled by the state as the foreign agents. So there was a law that passed a couple of years ago, but was just implemented last year to censor journalists and independent media that is critical of government or presents very negative view of the state. So in other words, the state doesn't tolerate any criticism or opposition and therefore creates laws that would conveniently call anyone a foreign agent. These are not foreign agents. These are Russian independent journalists or media outlets that don't want to represent the position that the state-sponsored media has because it's absolutely propaganda. So it's another convenient tool to say, people, why we're doing things. It's very convenient. There are protests you mentioned. Yes, they've been all over the world. So in big cities and Russia, and it says that people are not afraid. They've been going and saying no to war, and there is only way to fight against authoritarian and future becoming totalitarian state is by showing resistance, by criticizing and going and expressing this occupation. So if you speak to some Russians that read Russian-sponsored media sites, then you will get a very particular group of people that, well, been reading very wrong sites or deliberately decided to align with this position. Well, people make choices. And so it's convenient for them because either they've been brainwashed their entire life because this president has been in power on and off for the last 22 years. There are no democratic elections in Russia. So it's why people support him. Well, some might say, well, he's a charismatic leader, charismatic totalitarian leader. I mean, Russia is not yet totalitarian, but it aspires. It's going into that direction.
So, but I understand, I think you told one of my colleagues for an article that we did a few days ago regarding what's going on in Ukraine, that your own family, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe your mom and dad are not in Ukraine right now. They're in Russia, and that they seem to be more on the side of what the Russian government is doing. I don't know if that's the case or not, but what do you hear from them and what kind of conversations do you have with them?
Well, yes, they are in watching particular news and yes, they have that position. And I mean, the conversation is sometimes useless. You know, you can, you know, convince people, but sometimes it's not going anywhere and you're just not going. It's not like we have tensions. It's that they have adopted their position and I hope that with the time and they'll learn more about this, and eventually I hope they will change their position. I mean, we don't talk much about politics. I know where they're standing, and it doesn't do any good to escalate that topic. We talk about our relatives that are in Eastern Ukraine, and it's horrifying. So yes, there are tensions and there are divisions, but we still coexist and talk to each other.
I know we're running short on time. I just wanted to ask you two more quick questions. Because you do have friends and cousins who are in the Donetsk region, I might be pronouncing that wrong, in Petrovka.
No, it's correct. Yes, Donetsk.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that Western media is, I don't know if they're even able to go into these regions, or maybe, I'm not sure, but I don't think we've seen a lot of coverage from what's happening there. Do you have any description in terms of just what it means to be occupied and what that looks like on the ground at all, from based upon what you're hearing from the people who you know there?
What it means to be occupied, it means you're scared, you live in a bomb shelter, or in bomb shelter means it's your cellar. So every house would have a cellar and you would go and hide and you would just stay there because they say there were explosions nonstop yesterday and they're scared. So what it means, well, you live insecure and it's going to be trauma for your entire life, but you've been living in such condition for the last 8 years. So you will ask, well, how can you do this? Well, I don't know, because I hear what they're saying and I feel that it's devastating. I mean, I'm speechless that that's happening and kind of ashamed. So it's you know, innocent kids and people, civilians, become the victims of the decision of one single criminal authoritarian leader.
So no one really knows what's going to happen right now. World leaders, analysts, intelligence agencies. But what is your biggest concern? I mean, with war, there's always long-term trauma and long-term emotional divisions that happen between the two sides. You know, eventually you might have peace and reconciliation commissions, which happen in certain countries, like I believe Rwanda and even Peru, where there's been conflict and trying to sort of apologize for what happened in the past. But given these cultures are just so layered there, and there's just so many sort of ties and overlapping cultural traits. I guess what I'm asking you is do you feel like this could just do some type of permanent damage between people who were once neighbors and once got along?
Well, the damage has been already done. There are, you know, kids that have been traumatized by the explosions of 2014 and an ongoing war for the last 8 years. There is trauma. World War II, you know, there was this animosity towards Germans, and it takes decades, half a century, you know, to get over. I mean, I say it, get over, probably very easy word, but to reconcile this. So what I can say, that only time might, you know, bring this people together, but they're not enemies. They've been put in this situation. It's not people that want the war. People don't want the war. You go and ask civilians in Ukraine or in Russia, they don't want war. Unfortunately, that's something that can be reversed, and there will be casualties, and it was going to be very bloody. So the only thing is only time that can heal this.
That was Nadja Berkovich. Thanks for listening to Capital and Scott. For the latest news on the war in Ukraine, you can follow our coverage on ArkansasOnline.com. We'll be back Wednesday, March 9th.